Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing.com. to register for a meeting near you.
This is the January 16 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Jim McCormick. He's at AgMarket.net out of McHenry, Illinois. Garrett Toy is with us from First Choice Commodities in Stockton, Illinois. And Kayla Roy comes to us from Clayton Pope Commodities out of Fairbury, Illinois. Mike Zuzulo is also here. He's with GlobalAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Kayla Roy, I'll start with you because this is the first time you've been on our program. Thanks for being with us. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Like I said, my name is Kayla Roy from Fairbury, Illinois, my hometown. After my master's, I actually started in the grain business with Cargill. So I did that for about 5 years and then transitioned to the seed business. At Cargill, I had my Series 3 and 30. So after I left Cargill, I started working with Clayton Pope Commodities. And working with growers around the state, with, you know, doing their grain marketing consulting. And I also have a seed agency as well.
Tell me what you made of yesterday's China-U.S. trade phase one agreement and then the reaction of the marketplace.
Yeah, you know, it's a little disappointing. I wouldn't say it's terribly surprising, to be honest with you. I think there was just so much hype going into it. And once we got the deal signed, it just didn't seem like there was a whole lot of teeth to it, to be honest with you. You know, the China said that they'll buy based off of market factors. I mean, that seems like a pretty easy out. And, you know, as it sits today, we wouldn't be where China would necessarily go to buy, you know, unless they kind of gave us a token sale there. So pretty disappointing. I'm surprised we were as low as we were today, but, you know, not terribly surprised we were lower after that.
Mike Zuzulo, I know you well enough to know you've crunched some numbers already and probably sent something to your clientele. What did you find?
Yeah, I was surprised by the corn market. It really caught me off guard from a standpoint of why it was down the most. I know there was some negative news about Mexico and their ethanol blend that the Supreme Court pushed back in terms of the amount to be blended in, Todd. But when you see 3 months ago, many in Chicago or many in the commodity markets would say, well, we don't know what our trade's going to be with Japan. We don't know what our trade's going to be with the old NAFTA countries. We don't know what our trade's going to be with China. I think now you don't have to ask those questions. And so I felt like, especially in the corn market, we were trading in the rearview mirror. The trade has not gotten over the USDA crop report and really the no-show as far as a reduced number of production bushels for corn. And they just haven't embraced these trade agreements at this point. But for specific numbers, I'm not skeptical about the $32 billion because the Chinese that I have contacts with are suggesting a 10 million ton shortfall in pork. That's about 26 billion pounds of pork that they're going to need. That's almost what we produce. We'll produce about 26 or 28 billion pounds this coming year in pork. And, you know, when you look at the currency markets and you look at the U.S. dollar breaking to the Chinese currency to a level not seen for 5 or 6 months in terms of the Chinese currency at a 5 to 6 month high, that increases their buying power and increases our selling power. So I think there was another large commodity firm out of Asia in London this week talking about China needing 92 or 95 million tons of soybeans versus USDA's 85 million tons. So if the trade's disappointed about the lack of specifics, I would not be put in that camp.
Hey, Garrett Toy from First Choice Commodities there in Stockton. You do a lot of number crunching as well. USMCA passed out of the Senate. The president says he'll sign it next week, or at least he did when he made the Chinese announcement. I take it that probably just says, yep, Canada and Mexico are good. Not a lot of change there. There are some things in dairy and other sectors that will probably be worthwhile. And then the China numbers, can you look forward into the USDA WASDEs and see when they'll show up? Or have you done some supply and demand balance sheets on your own that give you an idea?
That's what surprises me. You know, I've seen the comments from the former World Ag Outlook Board head, Seth Myers, talking about, how the World Ag Outlook Board or OCE is going to have to account for this at some point. But, you know, as far as the market is concerned, I mean, they're going to want to see actual purchases, you know. And I agree with Mike. I mean, this is, you know, perhaps created disappointing, but I hate the term buy the rumor, sell the fact. But, you know, where do March corn close at today? The lowest level since 12-12, December 12th. What happened on December 12th? President Trump signed off on the phase one trade deal. You know, the only difference is today, you know, the BRL is 4.2 and on 12-12 is 4.03 and it's going the other direction, you know, in front of a Brazilian crop. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think maybe the trade deal this week or the trade deal signing yesterday did, you know, delay a reaction to last week's WASDE. You know, never mind the fact that, you know, it was the third largest production miss, you know, for a January report on record in corn. And I think it was the second largest production miss, bearish miss for soybeans. So, I mean, we had, you know, a delayed reaction. Nobody really knew what the trade deal signing would bring, but it likely, just what were expectations? You know, China's the deals are going to point to free trade or better trade. That means that China's going to be under the market in markets that have the biggest arb opportunities for them.
Jim McCormick, what was your assessment?
Well, on the China deal, you know, for me, it's essentially, if you're paying attention to what was going on, the Chinese have been saying all along, as the Trump administration has been throwing out the big numbers, the Chinese kept pushing back saying, we will buy this, assuming it meets our market criteria. They stated bluntly, they weren't going to buy corn just to buy corn. And I think the market was, I think you had a lot of people that were really expecting a big announcement yesterday that just didn't happen, and it kind of washed it all back out. Now, in the big picture, I think China will become a buyer of it. I don't think they go through all this hassle, Todd, for two and a half years of a trade battle with Trump just to not follow through with the commitments. But I think it's going to take a little bit of time. The Chinese are notorious, very good pricing, it seems like, and I would expect them to buy into the break. You know, as for the $40 billion we're talking about, the way we've been telling customers, heck, when you are at 25, you drop it down to 10. If you can get it back to 25, 30, it's a win for American agriculture. It'll help shift some of the oversupply to a demand-driven market, hopefully, and push it. And China is going to need this demand. I mean, the one thing people can kind of get caught up on is this $30 billion level is probably close to where they would have been without the trade war. They have an annual urbanization rate of roughly 22 million people a year. That's equivalent to adding a new city with 1 million people in it every 2 to 3 weeks. That's a lot of people to be continually feeding that are coming out of the rural part of the country that need to be fed. So, you know, the demand was going to show any time, you know, that overall is going to grow to the numbers they're talking about. So it's just a matter of when they're going to come in our opinion.
Okay, so are any of you concerned, and I don't know whether you will be yet or not, that USDA WASDE will have to print these numbers in the February report one way or the other, because it is now a signed policy, and I doubt that they'll see the USTR figures, and there are actual purchase figures, apparently, in those USTR documents. They're not likely to see what those are, but they're going to have to put them in the February WASDE, and the trade doesn't sound like it's going to believe it, I don't think, or maybe by the time we get to February the 11th, they will. What do you think, Mike?
I think they will believe it. I think that the funds do take the USDA data at face value, and I think that goes back to the corn production number. We're not really any lower than we were back in October on the WASDE report of total supply of almost 16 billion bushels, and because we don't know what it is yet from the official agency. And so I do think they will take it at face value. I clearly feel as though we've got the best opportunity in 5 or 6 years that wheat will no longer be a feed grain and a competitor to the corn. I'm less worried about ethanol just because of the fact that we have such a strong demand base on the feed side. And if prices in the hogs and cattle don't rally, I could see, and I think my clients are already starting to talk about it again, adding weights and backing up marketings. And so the feed and residual number is not going to back down. So I think you've got a lot of reasons to think that the downside is very limited, but the funds don't see it that way. They trade the USDA, in my opinion.
So feed grains might be a place that we have to watch. Is that right? As opposed to just the corn number.
That'd be my opinion, especially with the idea that the Chinese could come in and swoop in, get some DDGs as well.
DDGs, sorghum, clearly. Other things, I suppose.
Hey, Todd, as for the DDGs, I was going to say, that's something I think people really got to look at. I mean, there are reports that we've had from some of our contacts late last Friday, after the report had come out, that there was a lot of aggressive pricing around the country of DDGs. And a lot of people are speculating that was at least China coming in there snooping around, because they were big buyers of those products before the trade war kicked in. And I think that may be a product they may swoop in and buy, something that the public's really not aware of, but something they could take advantage of.
So, Mr. Toy, how do farmers handle all of this information? They have basis contracts that are up in March. They have bins that are still full, probably need to be cored, maybe even need to be moved.
Right. I mean, if you look at what the market's telling outside of today's, you know, the spreads are still relatively narrow. You know, March, May at 7 cents, you know, that today's close, 6.5, 7, yesterday's close. And Bates is still fairly stout, especially in the areas where the regionalized production issues are. And I think, you know, the market is still telling you that with basis contracts that are, you know, due in March, you know, the market's telling you to sell it. You know, I mean, we had, you know, I'm not sure there's enough carry in the market to, you know, when we had an opportunity to go out and price the, you know, $4 July corn if it was really out there. So, I mean, the market's kind of telling you it needs the corn on the front end here more than in the deferred, even though, you know, conventional wisdom with the trade deals and everything else is telling us, you know, it's probably going to have the need for the grain in the back end of the curve. To Mike's point, I mean, you know, and I've seen the comments from Dr. Irwin online, I'm cautious, you know, that if USDA does plug these numbers into the WASD, it could create some false sense of optimism here that, you know, we're going to have to actually see some grain move. We're going to have to see some purchases, that sort of thing. And that's one thing that, you know, that we have to be very careful about, I think.
So you're meaning false sense of optimism and producers would hold on waiting for a higher price that doesn't come?
Well, I mean, as far as Mike's point is whether the funds follow the USDA or the USDA numbers, you know, verbatim, you know, if funds do hold off, there's, you know, on selling in the markets or you know, whatever they do based off USDA, I think the risk is that it's going to create a tighter situation than it may be. The market at some point, from a fundamental standpoint, is going to want to see, you know, shipments leaving the door, leaving the country, that sort of thing.
Hey, Kayla, can you build the calendar for me and kind of think about what the marketing plan might look like on old crop from your perspective? Because I'm thinking we have the February 11 USDA reports, February 20, there's a quarterly report that will kind of flesh out some of the dollar amounts on those. That probably will be built into the ag form. I think that starts the same day. And then the big one, it doesn't come till the end. We'll have another WASD report in March, but the big one comes with the end of March and the acreage report. So that's I'm thinking about those as stepping stones along the way, but how do you guide producers through that process?
I mean, if we're just looking at, you know, levels to be selling at, if that's, I guess, where you're going with that, you know, really unfortunate because we were getting ready to put an offer out there on some old crop corn and some new crop corn. And I mean, as of this point, I wouldn't be chasing the market. I'd kind of let, you know, things settle out, especially after today. But especially for those guys that have some basis contracts off the March, I think it's going to be one of those things where, you know, give it a little bit of time. And I think market could come back a little bit. I'm not, you know, I don't have huge expectations out there. So I think it's going to be one of those things where we're going to have to eventually pull the trigger on that. But I mean, if you're looking at longer term, I mean, you certainly could build a case for either. I mean, the scary part is, you know, you could build a pretty bearish case looking at new crop, in my opinion. You know, you have all those acres that were in prevent plants that could go back into production, most of them going back into production. You know, just looking, I think we could potentially test, you know, 340 in those front months. And by no means is this a prediction, but, you know, I think there's a lot of things weighing on, you know, us going lower. So I think once we get there and, you know, we talk about it all the time, you know, rewarding the market if we do see these rallies. And don't get me wrong, I think if, you know, China comes in and we start getting some of these commitments, you know, start loading boats and, you know, unloading and seeing how that goes, I think that will spark a lot of momentum in the market. So I definitely think, you know, that could have a positive snowball effect. I just think it really comes down to once we can kind of see any kind of rally, especially at some of these profitable levels, to be selling into that.
Jim McCormick, do you have a plan going forward?
Right now, we're a little bit friendly on the, I'm a little bit more friendly on old crop corn than I am beans. We are encouraging guys to sell into it. But, you know, the one thing, Todd, we're noticing is the basis is still very, very hot. We had customers delivered to Decatur, Illinois today. They're at, you know, 22, 23 over the board. And what was really even more amazing is they were just driving right onto the dump. There is no lines at Decatur, we reported this morning, and that's really strange for this time of year. So there are some opportunities to take advantage of that strong basis, and we'd encourage guys to do that, because if the Chinese do rally market, we'd get some of the basis to move away. But more importantly, we're really trying to get guys to kind of focus in on the profitability of 2020. Our recommendations, we're already recommending as a company 30% sold here between this 405 to 415 zone is where we've already got 30% sold. And we're encouraging, you know, up to those levels, sell it, because I think it was like Kayla said, our spreadsheets argue our carryout to grow 2.5, 2.6 billion bushels at the end of next year with 95 million acres and trend yield.
Mike Zuzalo, you have a different opinion?
Only on the corn. I think I agree with the upside price targets wholeheartedly with all the others. I think the biggest difference I have is with the new crop corn potentially being able to get up to a higher level. But we may have to wait until we get to the February-March time period, Todd, and the actual, like I think it was Garrett that said, we have to actually see the actual demand come through. It seems like this is kind of a Harry Truman market at this point when it comes to the corn demand especially. One thing that I think is really important to watch now that we're in that critical key South America time period is it looks like the Brazilian crop is going to be there and be there in a big way. Argentina, probably okay. Not so much on the corn, though. So focusing on the beans, I'd be watching that new crop bean basis, you know, looking at Central Illinois right now, 45 under. And a couple, you know, years ago, we got to 65 under on a very big bean crop. So it may be one of those times where both new crop and old crop bean basis, if you've got a really strong one right now, it may be time to get some locked in anticipation of maybe the cash market being a little bit weaker as South America comes on and the Gulf price being a little bit weaker on the basis side, and then leave the futures open heading into the summertime.
Garrett, is it truly a show me kind of market, meaning show me that these purchases are going to be made, because what I see are bigger acres, certainly for soybeans, probably for corn, and a nice crop coming out of South America, in particular from Brazil.
Right. Well, even, you know, T-Storm's been on here several times talking about some of the dryness issues in Brazil, but, you know, even at this point, you know, you've seen comments from Mike Safroth that have said that, you know, they could, even with the dryness, they can still have a record crop. But I think the big thing, though, is if we do have this trade deal, that we're probably going to have a, you know, even with a normal size crop out of Brazil, we're probably going to have a more normalized new crop export program for soybeans if China is involved. So that's one thing to keep in the back of your mind. Off topic here a little bit, I wouldn't necessarily get too bearish just because of today's price action, whether it's phase one. You look at a seasonal chart, the Ides of January do not tend to do very well for March corn. In fact, you know, this point, this day last year, we had a 7.25 cent break, and in 2015, you know, we had a 16.25 cent break around the 13th of the month, and we tended to bounce back. So at the end of the day, when you're looking at a March corn chart, you know, knowing that seasonality in the back of the head, you know, we're still within the range. You know, we have support here at 373.5, upper end is 3.75 3/4, you know, and nothing's really changed. We're just within the range. So I don't want people to think we're all doom and gloom sort of thing. It's you know, it's just the market's doing their thing.
Anybody else got some thoughts of what producers ought to consider? And I think maybe we should transition into the soybeans directly, because the Chinese had historically been big buyers in this marketplace. African swine fever continues to play a role there. They are rebuilding their pork market, Mike, but I don't know. Will they need as many soybeans? They've changed rations, amino acids, even the U.S. The USARA, ASA came out with an idea that, you know, this is changing the way feed additives are being moved into the marketplace.
Yeah, and it sounds like the Chinese domestic producers are also going to get rid of their antibiotic use as well. So that's probably going to impact them in terms of having to feed out a little bit longer and maybe not have as much efficiency on saved pigs per litter. But, you know, with the I guess I'm in line with what the Maersk people put out a couple days ago, or Maersk people, however you want to say it. You know, the idea of getting up above 85 million tons of soybean imports into China for the U.S. Is there with this rebuilding. One of the largest hog producers in China, New Hope, I believe they had slaughter year over year down, but their profits were up 45%. So the incentive to repopulate, the government incentive of giving away interest-free loans and giving away land in certain parts of the country that's very dry and very arid and non-populated, it's there. And I think as long as we keep African swine fever contained, we don't have fresh outbreaks heading into spring, I do think that you have futures upside potential. It's the window between the Brazilian crop coming on, and this is where as Garrett was talking about too, I think the Brazilian real and the Chinese currency against the U.S. dollar, that's going to play a big role. And the Chinese have said that. It's based upon market conditions. They're not going to, it'd be like me going to a car lot and saying, I have $15,000 in my pocket. What can I buy for that? And so for us to think that, for us to expect them to give us details, I think that's just really naive.
Kayla, any thoughts on soybeans?
No, I mean, I would echo his comments, to be honest with you. You know, I hate to be doom and gloom here, and I'm really not. I certainly think you can paint a picture for, you know, things going either way. Obviously, China buying is going to be a big thing. You know, when I was talking about testing 340 corn in the front months, I think that bean to corn ratio, you know, is a good thing to play off each other. We still haven't gotten back to the 2.5 to 1. So I'd say fundamentals are probably friendlier on beans to corn. So if you're looking at, you know, 340, it's 2.5, we're looking at 850 front month beans. And again, not a prediction, but certainly, you know, something to at least take into consideration.
Hey, Kayla, I got a different question. Geographically there, how is the year for producers within a 25 mile radius of you?
That's a tough one. I would say for the most part, surprisingly really well. You know, I cover over by that Milford area as well. I'd say of my geographic location, that was definitely the toughest hit. I mean, just pretty variable, pretty spotty. But besides that, surprisingly really well, corn and soybeans both.
Yeah, so you're not lacking. You're not far enough north or
No.
Yeah, so that's what I was trying to get to.
No, I mean, we had particularly good yields, especially for the year, way better than what we had anticipated. I would say as this plays into the market, though, I mean, we're seeing a lot of farmer holding right now. So, you know, when we were talking about locking in some of these good basis levels, I would very much echo that because I'd say there's a lot on the farm left still.
Yeah, that's where I was headed, was to see what your basis looked like and how much of a pull you really had in that area, because you're not all that far from quite a bit of prevent plant close by. And you do have some usage areas there, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had very little prevent plant. I can think of a couple producers that had some big acreages in prevent plant. But for the most part, I'd say we got most of it in the ground. I'm seeing basis back off a little bit, you know, kind of comes and goes. We do have One Earth Energy there in Gibson that they've been pretty competitive. You always have Tate Lyle that's been really competitive. So I definitely think we have some good outlets. You know, always asking for pushes and basis is pretty, you know, a general rule of thumb with me. So I think we can get some pretty aggressive basis levels. And like I said, I think there's a lot out there left to move. So I think once we, you know, kind of see that flood the market, I mean, we're going to have guys that need some cash flow. So things are going to be coming in. So that's one thing that I'd be definitely looking at, locking in some good basis levels now.
So in the geographic area, Garrett, there in the northwestern part
of Illinois, Stockton, and then around the offices that you have in the middle part of Iowa, the Ames area. What's basis like in both of those places?
Around here, basis is it's firm, but it's not as firm as it was, say, 3 weeks ago. Even though we're a little bit softer, we're not off by much. It's say 2-3 cents sort of thing. It's nothing really noticeable. And we've only got about a 5 cent cash carry between now and March. Basis is, it's still historically strong. It's just not what it was, you know, perhaps. And maybe that's a function of, you know, we've had a higher board price here the last, you know, 3 weeks or so as well. Central Iowa, same thing. It's still tearing off of that Northwest Iowa market where, you know, ethanol plants are pushing for bids. We've got, you know, tradable values. I see Eastern Nebraska ethanol plants paying 10 over type numbers for quick ship stuff. And again, I think like Caleb said, that, you know, there's, you know, at Tate Mile, there's no lines, you know. I mean, it's part of that's weather as well here this week. But you know, basis is still stout, you know. And I don't know. I know there's regional issues. I mean, especially Northwest Iowa, which is a function of the prevent plant in Southeast South Dakota, and then you've got the prevent plant in Indiana in Ohio. I've been kind of a firm believer that the cash strength in other areas, especially in our area here, where, you know, we had good years, we had good yields around here. I mean, we had the same struggles that everybody else had with the growing season. But, you know, everything ended up well, ended up yielding well. I think last time I was on, you know, we asked about that June planted corn. It did 190, you know, 190, 192 for June 3rd planted corn. So, you know, for around here, you can't shake a stick at that. Moisture, you know, that's another story, whether it's profitable or not, but the yield was pretty good. But, you know, around here, I mean, I feel that, you know, I think cash is being influenced potentially by the MFP payments and helping cash flowing producers as far as making sales and needs. And I think that's influenced some of this basis strength in some areas where, you know, yield may not necessarily warrant it per se.
Hey, Jim, and then Mike, sort of a different question on this. So we've been trying to figure out for quite some time why it is that corn futures might not be reflecting what producers think was a short crop, but it appears that basis is just doing all the work to move crop in and out of areas that are short. I think that's the case, to fill the holes, and that it's just closed up the gaps by bringing all boats higher so that the basis levels across the whole of the Midwest have to come up to try to move crop into areas, despite the fact that demand hasn't been great for corn. Is that an adequate explanation, do you think, Jim?
Oh, yeah. I mean, essentially, I think you nailed it, Todd. The fact is the cash market, I think, is representing, you know, the basis is trying to pull grain where there's not. It's really kind of trying to pull it west to east, some of the poor quality, you know, to try to fill those voids. The ethanol plants are trying to keep running. Some have shut down in Indiana. But the futures market really has kind of, in my opinion, diverged from the cash market. The cash market is one animal. The futures market just seems to trade whatever the USDA trade, whatever that number they print. We're trading the government's just shy of 1.9 carryout. We're going to trade that for the next 30 days. And then we're going to see the funds decide. Well, let's see what they do in February. If they don't make any big changes, they're probably just going to stay short. That's why I find very frustrating. I think a lot of producers are frustrated because they're looking out saying, how is this market staying where it's at? They raise the national yield, Todd, by a bushel, but then they turn around and say, well, we're so confident that raising the crop national yield by a bushel, we're going to resurvey five states to figure out if that crop's really there. And I think, so the farmer's trying to figure out what's there. He's got this basis screaming. And like I said, the market really doesn't care right now. The futures market is trading what the government says. And like it or not, that's kind of how we trade nowadays.
Yeah, I agree. I think just to put a dovetail on what Jim was talking about, I think this is the opportunity for 2020. I mean, it is very frustrating that you want to walk away from the mercantile exchange. But before you do that, think about selling the cash in terms of the actual farm production and then coming back in almost immediately and buying it back on almost record low option volatility in the grains and a significant discount because of the funds and the way they trade. And they're still running a long equity short commodity spread. We just made another record high in the equities today or on Thursday. And I think it's really important for producers to start to embrace that. And if they don't understand it, get into it so that you do understand it, because I think that's where the better money is to be made, and the profitability is there when you look at the cash minus the futures. Take advantage of what the funds are doing is what I'm saying. Take an offensive role instead of getting frustrated with the futures market. And if you buy 5 or 6 cent calls and you've already sold cash and those calls erode, be glad, because you probably sold the top end of the market. And I think that's what we really got to start embracing to get through these tougher years. And hopefully we're on the downhill side of that, because I really don't think wheat has the ability at this stage, unless we really come on strong with the big crop or something big happens with some of these big trade deals. I think wheat is out of the business of being a feed grain as we get into the second, third quarter of 2020.
Any final word from you, Mike?
That should do it. Thanks for having me, Todd.
That's Mike Suzzolo. He is with GlobalAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Garrett Toy is at First Choice Commodities in Stockton, Illinois. A final word for our listeners from you today.
Yeah, I want to go back to what Mike was talking about with the Chinese demand and soybeans. Is it does appear that we've rounded the corner, perhaps, on demand. We've just finished up 2 straight quarters of year-over-year increases in Chinese imports, soybean imports. This is coming off of two quarters where we saw back-to-back and year-over-year declines because of the ASF hitting and whatnot. In fact, you know, these O&D imports out of Brazil, for China, were within a freckle of being a record import total for O&D. So, you know, basically to beat the USDA's forecast at this point, you know, Chinese imports need to be down 6% year-over-year. And at this point, it seems hard to believe the fact that we almost had a record quarter in Ocnovdies, and we're seeing year-over-year growth, that the last half of the marketing year for the Chinese, we're going to see a 6% year-over-year decline. So, I mean, I think, you know, longer term, you know, I think 975 is a decent area to make some new crop bean sales. You know, I'm still more optimistic on new crop beans than I am on corn.
Kayla Roy from Clayton Pope Commodities in Fairbury, thanks for joining us today. Do you have any final word?
Yeah, I'd say final thoughts. You know, we had kind of mentioned it today. Somebody had made the comment that, you know, typically we don't see the highs come in January. So I'm a big believer in seasonal price trends, and particularly, you know, if we can see some Chinese buying, I think it's just all about being poised to reward the market if we can see some of those rallies. So that would be really what I would encourage producers to look at. If we start running, you know, just be in a position where we can start selling into some of those profitable levels.
And Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net out of McHenry, Illinois.
I would just, you know, tell the producers, I mean, we fought very long for this trade deal with China. They probably, I mean, all indications are they want to fulfill their demand. Their stocks, like they're mentioning, are dropping. The demand's there for the beans. Their stocks and corn are dropping. So I think you're going to see some demand. And I think the market really is discounting it. Like I said earlier, the market right now does not project. It seems to react to what the USDA says, or true demand. So we start seeing the demand come to play like we expect due to this deal. You should see the market to react, and then we're just telling producers, don't get too overly bullish like a lot of people did last year. You know, price, look at profit. Forget about the price. If you can start getting profitable, you want to lock in those profits, because they can be fleeting in these markets any day now. But there's a lot of opportunities out there, options to take advantage of it. So be prepared.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org and listen to the whole of the programming anytime you'd like. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Garrett Toy, Kayla Roy, Mike Zuzlow, and Jim McCormick. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.